from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and Brent Martineau.
Hey, he got his name on the open. Tyler always.
Guy must have been working late.
I know. He does good work, man. He's got all these names that I don't even know where he gets most of them.
Is he like Surrey?
I guess.
Just punch it in?
He had T-Wig on there yesterday. He's been taking care of all the guest hosts this week as Mike Dempsey remains on vacation. He'll be back with us next Thursday. He's at Yellowstone today. I did see the tweet he sent out this morning. He's actually representing the show today. He's got the Jaguars Today shirt on as he's wandering through Yellowstone. So he's up there in Wyoming enjoying it. And, so you can check out his Twitter timeline if you want to see the escapades of Mike Dempsey as he continues his tour.
You guys have a shirt too, huh?
Yeah, we do.
Helmets and Heels and Jaguars Today has shirts.
We do, and we actually...
What the heck, 1010 XL?
I know. We've been.
How about an afternoon shirt?
Well, put it together. Put it together.
I guess it probably can't fit everybody on a t-shirt.
No. And you keep changing the name of the thing. Is it the Frank Frangie Show? Is it the Frangie Show? Pretty soon it's just going to be Fran afternoon.
I told Frangie soon it would be the Martineau Show. I mean, let's get it right here.
No doubt about it. Brent Martineau joining me today. And we got a bunch to get into throughout the next couple of hours. As I don't know if you saw it yet, but USA Today in their sports section has put up a list of the most depressing sports cities, the most depressed sports cities, miserable cities. Jacksonville obviously going to be on that list somewhere. We'll get into where they ranked them and what they did with basically the top five or so. And I feel like they have a bias against the state of Florida, but we'll get into that here in just...
Florida's giving them some ammunition now.
They are. We'll get into that here in just a couple moments. Also, another story about the NFL going to Vegas. We'll talk about that a little bit. Also, a Jaguar-specific topic. With the offseason done, minicamp over, OTAs done, wanted to talk to you, Brent, about, you know, we go into an offseason, and especially one like this, where we have expectations for a bunch of different players. Obviously, the excitement of Malik Jackson arriving here in Jacksonville, the draft picks, especially the first couple of draft picks being on the field, which we didn't get to see much of when everything was said and done here during the offseason. But a lot of excitement about the additions for this team. And coming out of that, coming out of the offseason, wanted to talk a little bit about the guys that maybe we didn't expect to be excited about heading into training camp, but now they're probably firmly in the, okay, let's see this guy with pads on and see what he really has, because I think there's a handful of names coming out of the offseason we can talk about that with, with this Jaguars team. So we'll get into that. Also, the fan feedback spotlight question of the day today, in honor of, look, I'm not super excited about the Independence Day sequel hitting theaters today, Resurgence. I'm not, like, all pumped up about Resurgence 19 years later.
Glad you just told me. I had no idea.
Yeah, go see another Independence Day movie. But I did see Independence Day, obviously, several times before. And the iconic moment from that movie is clearly the presidential speech, right? Getting the whole country, you know, rallied up again. Maybe the whole world. I think it may have been to the whole world. But, you know, we will not go silently into the night. Like, that whole thing. And I thought today, for the fan feedback question of the day, what Jaguars player, past or present, would you choose to give you a motivational speech?
Yeah, I like it.
If you could only
past
choose
or present.
One. Past or present. So somebody on the, if you want to choose one from each, I'm fine with that. As far as a guy that you could just feel like they would get you up for whatever challenge that you have in front of you. So if you want to get involved with the question today, you can at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, at Brent underscore. What are we doing now on Twitter, Brent?
No, it's just I haven't changed that too much. It's at Brent AS Jax.
Brent AS Jax.
No underscores. I don't know what that is and how to find it on a phone. So
at Brent AS Jax. You can also go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars today, and we'll get to some of your answers a little bit later on. Want to dig into those players that have caught our eye during this offseason, maybe the guys that we haven't. We didn't think we'd be excited about seeing when everything was said and done, getting ready for training camp, but maybe have jumped into that forefront for us. We'll talk about that as we get things rolling here on a Friday edition of Jaguars Today. Brent Martineau alongside myself, Fat Tony, here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Just getting started here on a Friday edition of Jaguars Today. Fat Tony, Brent Martineau in with me today for the next couple hours, where we'll be talking Jaguars and NFL football and anything else we happen to run into during the show, which we did several times yesterday with T-Wig in studio with me. Next week, I think Ryan O'Halloran on Monday. Pete Prisco going to join me for Jaguars Today on Tuesday. Still trying to figure Wednesday out, and Dempsey will be back with us next Thursday. So still three more days of official days off for Mike, but five more days off in total for him before we're back. And he gets the short two-day work week before we get the three-day weekend. So he timed this whole thing pretty well with the 4th of July coming up as well.
I wore this shirt just for you.
Oh, look at that, Sandlot.
Yeah,
I didn't even see the bottom of it. I just knew that was the Beast.
That's the Beast.
When'd you get that?
I got it in Omaha.
Oh, did you?
I was thinking of you guys. I was like walking out of there. I was like, I got to get the shirt.
So they just have like a bunch of like baseball movie stuff too?
Yeah, because they had... you know, the Bears jersey, and, you know, they had, so I got a couple of them, different ones, actually, but I wanted to find some more just to maybe have, like, a whole wardrobe full of...
Did the Bears jersey have the bail bonds on the back?
It did.
And that's awesome.
Bail bonds with the yellow, you know, the yellow and white, yellow-looking style shirt, so it was kind of cool. I am telling you this about Omaha. You will get tired of looking at T-shirts in Omaha.
Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh. It's just like... It's like a T-shirt factory. That's like the side business, I guess, there. Tent City is just full of T-shirts, and after a while, they all look the same.
Yeah, it makes sense, though. You know, you go to an event like that, a lot of people are just going to do it once. You know, maybe go to see their team. Yeah. Why not put up everything you can in front of them to try to convince them to buy something?
They have a lot of them.
It'd probably get me to buy a T-shirt.
You'd like them because they have some stuff like, I like this other store, Baseballism.
Mm-hmm.
It's online, too, but they had some cool shirts, just like, baseball shirts.
I'll check that out.
Yeah, go online and check that out. I think you'd like it.
No, absolutely will. Today's question of the day is the fan feedback spotlight question of the day. What Jaguars player, past or present, would you choose to give you a motivational speech? Kind of inspired by the presidential speech in the first Independence Day movie as the sequel is hitting theaters today. I want to get into the Jaguars, some of the guys that have caught our eye throughout this offseason that we'll be paying closer attention to than we thought we would. Once we get into training camp here in just a moment, but first, let's get out to the phone lines for the first time today at 641-1010. Tony on the south side, I think he wants to give us his nomination for who he'd like to have motivate him with a speech. What's going on today, Tony?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Yeah, actually, mine's not really a speech, but more of a motivation.
Okay.
The pregame slap from John Henderson will definitely motivate me to win games, I'll tell you that.
You want John Henderson to slap you in the face?
There you go. That'll wake me up. I think that'll work.
Tony, you're a crazy person, man. That may wake you up. It may put you to sleep, too. John's a big guy. The guy that's slapping John isn't as big as John. Like, that's just not the way that works. We appreciate the call. Yeah, I'm not letting John Henderson smack me in the face. I can get motivated other ways. But he's been a common answer today already.
I was going to say, that would be probably a pretty strong answer right there. Slap in the face or not, I think John can get you a little fired up.
That's when I was a young man and was stupid with some of the things that I said. I was, you know, I'll let Ray Lewis hit me full speed. I don't care if it means I get to wear the pads. And then, you know, you get a little bit older, you think about it, it's like, why would I ever allow that to happen? Like, there's no reason for that.
No.
Would I attempt to catch, like, a Brett Favre rocket? Yeah. You know, when he, like, really throw one, Brett, and just see if I can catch the ball without breaking my hands? Yeah, I'd try that kind of thing, but I'm not just going to let some guy hit me. I used to joke around about wanting to... just one time be the wedge buster on a kickoff return. And then, again, I thought about it some more, got a little bit older, a little bit wiser, and said, why would I ever have wanted to do that? That's just so insane. So, no, John Henderson slapping me would not be the choice that I personally would make to inspire
I don't think it has to be a slap either. I think just Big John, he's got a little influence now.
Yeah.
Just because of the size, and he can get after you. I don't know if it needs to be a slap. Whatever that guy said, you'd probably be willing to go do.
Yes. I had the opportunity to travel with the team on the team plane at the end of the year. I can't remember what year it was. Maybe in 2006. I think it was between the playoff appearances. But they went to Kansas City week 17. They needed a bunch of things to go right for them to make the playoffs. And they lost that game to Kansas City, and John Henderson got thrown out of the game. So I go down into the locker room. It was like third quarter John Henderson got thrown out. I still don't know why he got thrown out. So I go down into the locker room. I'm getting sound from a bunch of guys, and John's over there. There's somebody talking to him. So I walk over. I'm going to ask him a few questions. And Big John, the guy that's standing there, I can't even remember who it was that asked him the question, but basically just asked him, so what happened that you wound up getting tossed out? And John kind of went, and he put on that like angry face that John Henderson gets. And he paused for a few seconds. And he said, "I'm not going to talk about that." Like, and I was like, "I'm done with John."
No, that'll be a follow-up question here.
I'm not getting anything from John today. He looks like he could rip me in half right now if I try to follow up on that particular question. It was funny. He came in studio with Mike and I last year, and I asked him about that. I was like, do you purposefully, like, occasionally try to intimidate the media because we're all so much smaller than you? And he just kind of laughed. He was like, "No, I don't even remember that. I don't remember why I got thrown out of the game. I don't remember any of that or the anger that he had." So every time I've been around John away from football, he's been a super nice guy.
He's a big nice guy. But at the same time, you know, I think he is the epitome of a guy that can turn it on and off on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are teammates that felt the way you did in that moment. You know,
I think there are
teammates that played with him are like, "I'm not really sure what I should say or do to this guy today. I'm just going to leave him alone."
Right.
You know, I mean, I think he could get that kind of wound up. And so, but I think you also like playing with a guy like that.
No doubt.
Because there's, you know, that's kind of the, you know, we talk about like Luke Jokel or players like that, that you're kind of looking for that nastiness on the offensive side of the ball from an offensive lineman perspective. Where did the Jags get that? That's what they're talking about. I mean,
yeah.
You know, if you think about a nastiness of a player, on the offensive end, in Jags history, you probably think of Tony Boselli. And on the defensive end, you probably do think of John Henderson. I'm probably missing some guys. There's a lot of them. And Donovan Darius, obviously, you know, came with a certain kind of nastiness and physical play. But I think that totally different mindset once you get inside the lines. I think Boselli was like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Henderson was definitely like that. And I'm not saying those two guys were the same, like,
no.
But they had that nastiness to you, and you need it in this game. I mean, it's just it's a crazy man's game.
Yeah,
you know?
And with Boselli, it's kind of fun because he was kind of he was an animal on the field. He really was, and you can kind of sense that from him every now and then, you know, doing the pregames or whatever with him for Jaguars game. When they're getting ready to play somebody like J.J. Watt, you can feel it from Tony.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that idea of, this is what I would do.
He wishes, you know, he was in there, yeah.
And you know, I would be hitting him. I would be laying on him. I would be kicking him in the back of the head. I would be doing what I have to do to make sure that I'm going to win that matchup that day. Like, you can feel that rise to the level of the challenge that you're going to get still from him just getting ready in the booth, you know, to go out there and call these games. And from a where the team is right now perspective, it's part of the reason that you got excited about them bringing in guys like Ramsey and Jack and Malik Jackson. Even what this team didn't have is attitude. I think they had some players that were pretty good. And look, Telvin is a really good player, and he's a spark plug guy. He's a guy who's going to jump up and dance around, and he gets his teammates going after he makes a play. But he's not the guy that I saw on tape with a guy like Ramsey or Jack, where there are times when you're watching a play at Florida State or UCLA where the guy's not on the screen and all of a sudden he's there and the guy with the ball is going 5 yards backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't a whole lot of that on this football team here for the last couple years, but they have that attitude, that influx of that attitude with these young guys that hopefully is going to pay dividends for this team.
Yeah, and I think those are good examples, although I'll have to see. I think even more so than maybe them in that vein, you know, in terms of a guy that kind of smiles, seems like a fun guy off the field that we see, and then is a different guy on the field. I wonder if Dante Fowler Jr. is that. They talk about him playing in a violent way. I think he'll, you know, bite you if he has to, or mm-hmm. do whatever he's got to do inside that pile to get the football, or he'll knock you back some yards. So I think I like that what you're saying with Ramsey and Jack. We'll see if they are like that at this level. I just don't know if you always know that. You know, you don't know, will they play? And those guys, well, at least Ramsey, to a degree, plays a finesse type of position,
mm-hmm.
in a way, you know, but they want him to play it physical.
Sure.
Right. So I think, but I do think Fowler Jr. could be that guy. That's what maybe has me most intrigued about this year, is watching him play, because I think he kind of got lost at times on that defense at Florida, where he popped out if you were watching him.
Mm-hmm.
He was there on every play, but they had so much talent on that defense that at times, your eyes were drawn away from even a guy like Dante.
Certainly,
Fowler,
yeah.
You know, where I think he could be at in this defense, although there's a bunch of talent now here, it looks like he could be a focal point, you know, and a guy that really jumps off the screen at you. So I do wonder, you said it, attitude, to me that says swagger. I think these young guys do bring that, you know, but that's only good. It's only good if you're making plays.
No doubt.
Absolutely, and we talked about attitude, and nastiness was a word that you brought up, and that's what Dante Fowler described himself when he sat down with you and Mike in studio.
Nastiness, that's what I bring. I'm just a nasty person, a fun person on top of that, on and off the field. I like to get the crowd rocking. You know, I just like bringing that energy, you know, in the bank that, you know, that we need. So I can't wait, you know, to go out there, run around half sacks, you know, get the crowd off his feet and roaring for us when we win. So I can't wait.
Oh, Dante. Dante was so good. It was the first chance that I had had to sit down and really talk to him that way. And he embraced it. Like, you can feel him. Like, he's still really enjoying the moment of being able to be back out there on the field. And he's one of the guys that I'm really curious about seeing him when the pads go on and how confident he is in that knee. But he's not a guy that I didn't think I'd be focused on, right? I knew when they didn't get Vernon, they didn't get Ayers, when they didn't sign any of these veteran guys that, all right, the bullseye is directly on Dante Fowler Jr. at that Leo spot. But when we're talking about some of the guys that maybe we didn't expect to be focused on when the offseason got started, I know the guy at the top of that list for me is Sheldon Day. And just the way that everyone I've talked to has talked about Sheldon, Gus Bradley singled him out, Dante Fowler Jr. singled him out, Telvin Smith singled him out. When we talked to these guys, I was surprised at how much attention he was getting. He's that three-tech guy where his quickness really showed up during the offseason, and I'm really, really curious to see what it's going to look like when the pads go on and those linemen can really get their hands on him.
Yeah, he's opening some eyes. I just wonder how much can he play and where will he play?
Right.
You know, because of the rotation. He might be the kingpin of the domino effect of what happens with that rotation. If they say, hey, we got to get this guy on the field more. You know, we can't put him out there for 8 plays. We need to get him out there for 18 plays. What does that do to Sendarek Marks' playing time? Can you get him on the outside? You know, can he play multiple positions? I don't know. I think they think he can. But if he's best at that 3 technique, man, what's happening with Malik Jackson? Are you moving him around? And what's happening with Sendarek Marks?
Sure, and I think down gets more complicated, too.
Sendarek Marks, to me, is such a... I love Sendarek Marks. I just wonder what's going to happen with his playing time. 30 to 40 snaps, where, okay, 40 snaps, you can be really good in that time frame. You know, that's a good number. That seems like be the number being thrown around. But what if these other guys are playing well and playing better? The Jags' best defensive player from 2 years ago, who missed most of everything last year, you know, might be squeezed out a bit. So very interesting to watch that rotation. It's really the number one thing for me in August is to watch how Todd Wash uses this rotation of players that he has that can play a multitude of positions.
Mm-hmm.
And seemingly they have talent at multiple positions, you know, with that versatility. So Day is one. I'll give you another one for me. I don't know if you want to keep going down this list. I know we're getting
sure.
close, but I think all of a sudden Yannick Ngakoue is more than intriguing. You know, I think because of what you just said, that domino effect behind Dante Fowler Jr., he becomes that depth guy, second out of the gates, and I think they are really impressed with his speed. I know they'll talk about the run game and things like that, but that's not what he's here for in year number one. He's here to bring the speed, get to the quarterback, maybe give Dante Fowler Jr. a blow, and I think he now becomes a guy with all the other players that are big names with the Jacks, the Ramseys, the Dante Fowler Jr., you know, the Malik Jackson, the Tayshawn Gibson. There's so many guys to watch on that defense that we just haven't seen out there other than, you know, running around in shorts.
Right.
I think Yannick Ngakoue is a very intriguing player to get to learn and know and see what kind of impact he can have, and probably not a lot of reps that he'll get per game, but they could be very important reps.
And I'm curious to see what they want to do on first and second down when Dante can't be out there.
Yeah.
Right. When he does need that breather on first and second down, what are they doing at that defensive end spot? Because if they don't feel confident with Yannick Ngakoue on the field on rundowns, right, which I don't know how they do or don't feel about that now, and I'm not sure that they can know how they do or don't feel mm-hmm. about it now until they get him in pads and actually see him trying to do that physically. He's got the quickness. He's got the speed. It looks like he could be an effective situational pass rusher for this team, if nothing else, and that's good. Right, like if you're drafting a guy in the third round, you drafted a guy at number three overall the year before, you expect that's probably the position he's going to be in, is to be a situational pass rusher. The question for this team to me are they going to play Dan Scuda, you know, when it's not Dante Fowler on first and second down? Is Ryan Davis still going to be the Leo kind of when they don't have Dante on first and second down, just feel like he needs that break in the middle of the game? Because I don't think he can play. You can't ask Dante Fowler Jr. to play every snap of every game.
Yeah, yeah.
And you want him on the field on third down because you feel like he is going to be an effective pass rusher for you. But that means that there's going to be times where he needs to come off the field. And who's going to be coming on the field for Dante when it's not pass rush?
Can you slide Malik Jackson out? Can you do things like that? You know, because now you have
they
some
haven't
Derek
been
Marks
willing
that,
to do
you know?
That kind of thing before. They like it's it feels like they've been so locked into this is a Leo.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and maybe with Todd Walsh coming in and what they saw did or didn't work last year with this defense, maybe they say, let's just if we're in a situation like that, well, let's just put the four best guys we have available on the field.
Yep.
Like that should be the idea. I'm just not sure that I've seen that flexibility yet from this defense.
Keep in mind, last year they didn't play with a true Leo, in essence, the way they define it, because they couldn't get a pass rush out of Chris Clements.
No.
You know, but he was very good at the point of contact and those first and second down situations stopping the run. The problem with Ryan Davis, the reason why he didn't play as much is because he wasn't as effective against the run. So I'd be surprised to see him in that kind of role. But if you want to just, if your focus is to stop the run there, you know, I would think you'd be willing to put Cinderic Marks and Malik Jackson on the field at the same time in some of those situations. And I always go back, and I've said this on our afternoon show quite a bit, but when they signed Malik Jackson, I called Terrence Knighton because he had played with him a little bit, just asked him a little bit about him. I said, what's this mean for Cinderic Marks? The bottom line is those are two, at the time, he's like, those are probably your two best defensive players,
mm-hmm.
right? He said, you're getting them on the field at the same time as much as you can. Now, things have changed a bit with the draft and free agency and elsewhere they've added, but that kind of resonates still with me that I think I want to see the package where you put those two guys on the field at the same time and if it's not just on third down.
Right.
Which third down package, you could see that for sure. You know, sliding Roy Miller out of there. And again, that rotation on that defensive front is so intriguing to me and I think should be to everybody else. I think it's very hard to project. I think, you know, even talking to them down in the building, it's unless they've got something in mind they just don't want to tell you yet, but I don't even think that's the case. I think they're kind of waiting and seeing what shines, you know, what rotations work together. I think those preseason games will be somewhat important, those first couple especially, to see who works together well. And, of course, health will be a big part of this. Got to get through the month of August.
Yeah, they got a lot more depth than they've had in the past, and there's pieces to play with. Yeah. And honestly, here in Jacksonville, they're just not used to having that. You know, it's like, all right, it's third down. Let's send out those four guys.
That's right.
You know, that's kind of been the case for the last couple of years. And this year feels like, all right, it's third down. Who do we want to send out this time? Yeah, is the position at least they're in right now. And maybe there's a group of guys that emerges here over the next couple months before we get ready for the season. I think I saw on the 1010XL Twitter handle today that we are 79 days away from kickoff.
Slow it down, 1010XL Twitter handle. Slow it down.
But 79 days, we're something like 31 days away from training camp opening up.
Yeah, that's actually the one you have to slow down. You can speed up the rest of those 40 once it comes.
Look, man, I don't try to rush through this month at all. I enjoy this month where there's not much going on and the anticipation of what is going to happen in the fall, especially for a team that feels like the expectations are going to be as high as they've been in a very long time. Let's switch gears to the offensive side of the ball. Maybe a guy or two that has caught our attention on that side, outside of Marquise Lee, who's obviously been taking full advantage of the opportunity he's had during this offseason. Brent Martineau alongside. I'm Fat Tony. Mike Dempsey still on vacation as we continue along on a Friday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
USA Today put out their list of the most miserable sports cities in America. We've still got to get into that a little bit later on. Jacksonville is on that list among those 40 sports cities.
We're not at the top now, are we?
We're not at the top. We're not at the bottom, and we're not at the top. We'll let you know exactly where Jacksonville is on that list. Like I said, I think they have a bit of a Florida bias on that list. I'll explain that as well. I want to get into some of the offensive players that have stood out throughout the offseason as well. Maybe guys that we didn't expect to have in the crosshairs when we got to training camp, but have kind of moved into that kind of position here in just a couple of moments. But also, before we do any of that, the fan feedback spotlight today. We're asking you, the fans of the Jacksonville Jaguars, what player, past or present, would you choose to give you a motivational speech? That question inspired by the fact that the second Independence Day movie, 19 years after the first, is hitting theaters today. And, of course, the iconic moment from the first Independence Day movie is the presidential speech by Pullman to get us all together as one united group again. And in case you've forgotten what that sounded like, what you're looking for in your motivational speaker, it sounds like this.
And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
Oh, yes.
It's
one of the best bad speeches in a bad movie of all time. And yes, Independence Day is a bad movie. But that doesn't mean that you don't enjoy it. There are bad movies that we all love. I know I can't turn off Rocky IV whenever it's on. I will never confuse Rocky IV for a good movie. But I want to watch Rocky win the Cold War for me. Take down Draco every single time it's on.
Is that the speech, by the way, in the United Kingdom
today? I don't know.
That's bizarre, isn't it?
I feel bad for everyone who works in like the stock markets and all that stuff today. I can't imagine what a day like today is like. The chaos that kind of thing creates.
Obviously, I've been on vacation. So I wasn't really paying attention that this was coming up. And all of a sudden, it started going crazy last night. I wanted to say, should I go freeze my 401k? Can you freeze your 401k? Can you just stop it?
The way they were
talking about it, and it hasn't been a good day with the markets already.
So, no. Not a good one, as if you didn't know, England has decided to leave the EU, the European Union, and it is creating some ripples.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody knows that. The reason nobody knows what the heck to make of it.
Over here, I have no idea.
Yeah.
EU is. Like, I knew the term, you know, EU, okay.
Yeah. been part of ever since, what, like World War II, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's just kind of been the thing.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden you're hearing about it. But
I have no idea.
But I even think if you read up on it, which I did a little bit last night and today, it could be good. It could be bad.
Great.
It just depends on what side of the table you are, like all political stuff. That's it.
That's a great take right there, Brett. It could be good or it could be bad.
Read it, like they'll give you four options and two of them like, okay, we can deal with that, or that could be good for everybody, or this or that. And of course, if you're on the other side of it, you know, hell's freezing over. So
I guess. We'll see. Duval Doom's upset with me for calling Independence Day a bad movie. It's a bad movie. I didn't say you're not allowed to enjoy it. It's a bad movie that you happen to enjoy. Embrace it. I say embrace the bad movies that you love. I do. I certainly do. As there are several of them. I love Reign of Fire. I love Rocky IV. There are plenty of bad movies that I watch every single time that they're on. And if one of those happens to be Independence Day, so be it. Just go back and look at the reviews of that movie. It's not very good. And, honestly, I'm shocked at how good the reviews on this one have been to this point. Independence Day resurgence is at like 55%. And I expected, based on those previews, I was expecting maybe a 1 in 5 chance that I would really love this movie, which would put it at about 20%, right? And at 50%, I'm like, holy cow! I was like, I almost have to go see this on opening weekend now, which I probably will by the time we get to Sunday. Back into some Jaguars talk. Offensive side of the ball and some of the guys that have stood out throughout the offseason. Obviously, Marquise Lee, a name that jumps to the forefront just because we haven't seen him stay healthy this long since he got here to Jacksonville, but healthy throughout the entire 4 weeks of the OTAs and the mini camp, and looks like there may be a real opportunity for him to have a real role in this offense. And I think missing time during the offseason and training camp has prevented him from having a comfort level and from the coaches having a comfort level with him to just be a part of the offense that I think may finally be there this year.
Yeah, that's the thing. You said it, the comfort level, the confidence level in his play and just being available. You know, we talk about it all the time. But I think it's what a boost it's been for him to get by this period of time. And I think getting to September 11th will be just that's the next thing. You know, that is that's a big part of it. I think there's a lot of confidence in him, and obviously there's an excitement about him, but I think there's kind of like with this football team, as you get excited now, this team and this fan base has feel like they've been burned about being excited so many times. I think there's a hesitation, so you don't want to get too excited is I guess the point. But man, what a game changer it could be. You know,
no doubt.
just a different level that he could take this offense. You continue to hear, and I go back, I say this a bunch, when you look at the faces of the players and the coaches when you ask questions about him, it speaks more volumes than the words. You know, it's one of those deals where it wouldn't work well in print. It would look, you'd get it on TV, you know? So I'm excited about the prospects of it, but again, a kind of a cautious excitement.
Yeah, and it's understandable just with what we've seen from him before, and I've described it as watching him through his first couple of years when he was able to be on the field. It felt like everything was still going too fast for Marquise Lee, and maybe having the opportunity to be out there through an entire offseason, hopefully stay healthy through a training camp, getting ready for a season, slows it down for him because he has a tremendous amount of athletic ability, and it just hasn't been allowed to show up on the field yet because it feels like the game, they talk about it slowing down. He hasn't been on the field enough for it to do that for him yet, and I feel like there could be a real breakout potential for him if he does get to that kind of point, because he's the only guy they have that can do the things that he can do. You know, there's nobody else. They don't have running backs that can do what he can do. He's the only guy that can do what Marquise Lee can do for this team. Look, Allen Robinson has been, and Allen Hurns for that matter, have been surprisingly great down the field, especially a guy like Hurns who you just don't expect it from. His ability to get behind defense is still, I marvel at, because he must just be a tremendous route runner for him to be able to get behind defenses, because he's not that blazing guy. He's not an especially big guy, but he finds a way to get that kind of thing done. And Allen Robinson is one of the best guys with the ball in the air right now in the National Football League. At least he was last year, and that has paid dividends for this team. Do they have a guy now that can just run past you in Marquise Lee, which is an element that they don't have anywhere else in this offense?
Yeah, well, and I think you just said something that I think we've all said, and they've all said, and we want to see what it means, and that is what he does things that nobody else can do. So what does that mean, you know? I mean, I think we get it. Yeah, he can fly, he can get down the field. But in terms of their offense, taking it to a next level, which it really obviously got bumped up big time last year in the passing game, but what does it mean for him and for everybody else and really the look of this offense, you know, with all the weapons around it? And you have to remember now you're starting, we hope, from scratch with a healthy Julius Thomas, year two in the system for all these guys in Greg Olsen's system. So, and now with an added depth at running back, too, that you can rely on. So all of these pieces, but he continues to be kind of that one curiosity, and we hear it all the time. He's the one guy that does stuff that nobody else can do. Well, what does that mean in the scope of their offense? I think will be fun to watch and see play out.
Yeah, we got this state in football history, the Honda Driver on the NFL coming up next. We want to talk a little bit more about some of the guys on the offensive side of the ball. I did just get distracted by this. The text line driven by Duval Ford at 641-1010. So this person has to just be trolling me, right? Like, that's the only reason that you would even text in something like this. They've sent in back-to-back texts from the 813. Independence Day is not a bad movie. Okay, whatever. The new Mad Max is a bad movie. You're a crazy person. If you think Mad Max is a bad movie, all right, you're a crazy person. I'm not even going to go through all the accolades that the new Mad Max movie got, especially compared to, I mean, Independence Day. Are you kidding me? Like I said, enjoy, embrace the bad movies that you love. Mad Max is a certifiably good movie. How well it was reviewed, it was up for Best Picture, you clown. He's just trying to get to me.
Do we have an updated view count here, Tony?
And he did a little bit. For Mad Max?
Yes.
I saw it 13 times in the theater, and I don't know how many times I've seen it since I got it on Blu-ray.
I agree with the guy calling you.
I still watch it like once a month. At home on Blu-ray. Like, I'll be doing something else in the house, and I'm just like, you know what? Let's get a little Mad Max. Let's journey across the desert one more time with my boy Max. I don't have to explain anymore how much. We did get following up that one. Rocky IV is a great movie. I don't know that it's great. I love it, though. There's no doubt about it. We got to do a top five bad movies that you love one of these days. Because my list would be interesting as far as the bad movies that I love.
My list would be short.
And, yeah, the 813.
Me and Brett have probably, like, the worst movie experiences.
I know. I'm in here with a couple. Like, if Dempsey was here, there'd be, like, all right. Dempsey would actually tell me that Mad Max sucked, too. But
tell everybody what shirt I have on today, though, Tony.
He's got the Beast shirt on. He's got the Sandlot shirt on because that was his answer anytime we did a movie culture pop top five.
That's right.
The Sandlot showed up. And
what's Karate Kid under? Is that a bad movie that you love or a good movie?
Karate Kid's good, right?
I like it.
I really like Karate Kid. It's in my top five. Of all time? Of all time. Yeah, the 813 followed up.
He said, seen eight.
Got you fired up, didn't I? Yes, you did.
Yeah, if we wanted to have a really good movie segment, it'd be me, Brett Martineau, and Hacker. All three of us with our movie experiences.
Yeah.
Between the three of you, have any of you seen a Godfather movie?
No.
Oh, yeah, I've seen Godfather.
Okay. Then I'll have a conversation with you. The other two, no, I'm not talking to you. If you haven't seen the Godfather movies, at least the first two, and... like Shawshank Redemption.
Yes.
Like if you haven't seen the movies
haven't seen Shawshank Redemption?
I have seen Shawshank. Okay. It is one of my favorites.
Yeah, is considered like the best American movies of all time. I'm not having the conversation with you about.
I'm in.
About these movies.
I'm in the cool club.
It's just not going to happen. We got this date in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL coming up next.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or if you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 904-620-9225. He is a certified Invisalign provider. You can visit him online as well, jamesjmccall.com, for a complete list of comprehensive care services. As far as what occurred on this date in football history, one birthday of note, Michael Cheever, the former center for the Jacksonville Jaguars, second-round pick of the Jags in 1996, turns 43 years old today. And a historic event today, on this date in 1922, the American Professional Football Association, or the AFPA, changed its name to the National Football League. And obviously that name has stuck ever since. The APFA was founded in 1920. This was also the date on which one of the founders of the league, George Halas, changed the name of his franchise from the Chicago Staleys to the Chicago Bears. Ever heard of them? Care to guess what at some of the other cities have fielded a team in the NFL in 1922, Mr. Martineau? This is an impossible question. You may know one of them. St. Louis did not, although the Cardinals were technically in Chicago at the time. At some point, they were in St. Louis.
Boston.
Nope. There's one other NFL team that is still around.
Say New York.
Nope, not yet. New York came in, I think, 1925-ish. Okay.
I'm going to give one more chance here.
A rival of the Bears.
Who said Green Bay?
Green Bay. The Green Bay Packers, the only other NFL name you'll know from the 1922 season. Here are some of the other teams that played. The Columbus Panhandles went 0-8. The Evansville Crimson Giants at 0-3. Apparently they folded pretty early on in the year. The Hammond Pros.
Where's Hammond?
I don't know. Rochester Jeffersons. The Minneapolis Marines went 1-3. A lot of these teams didn't even finish the season. The Louisville Brex only played in four games. The Oorang Indians at 3-6.
Oorang?
Yeah.
What? Where's that?
I don't know. But they went 3-6.
They should list states with this thing. It's
the Milwaukee Badgers at 2-4-3. There were ties a lot in the NFL back then. The Akron Pros, the Buffalo All-Americans, the Dayton Triangles, who went 4-3-1. The Green Bay Packers, Racine Legion, Rock Island Independents, Toledo Maroons, Chicago Cardinals, Chicago Bears, and the Canton Bulldogs, your champs that year at 10-0-2.
It was a Midwest league.
Yeah, and really, I was reading a little bit about the history of the league last night. The NFL was the first league that went to basically covered coast to coast. They expanded to the West before Major League Baseball did. With the Cleveland Rams at the time moving out to Los Angeles, they also reintegrated in the NFL before baseball did with Jackie Robinson.
Huh.
They were a league that they didn't want to expand beyond the Midwest. Like the owners like Halas and Preston Marshall with the Washington Redskins at the time, they didn't want to expand because the travel costs would be too much.
Yeah.
So when teams like in Cleveland, when they wanted to go to Los Angeles, they were like, no, we're not going to do that. And basically the owner of the Cleveland Rams at the time said, look, you're going to let me go to Cleveland or you're going to let me go to Dallas or I'm out. My team's just going to fold. I'm done. I'm done with this whole thing. And because the AFL was really coming into place at that time, and Paul Brown was coming into the AFL with the Cleveland Browns, and they were worried about how much of the piece of the pie they were going to be able to hang on to. They said, if you can work it out in L.A., then work it out in L.A., and basically made the owner of the then Los Angeles Rams pay them an extra $5,000 for every trip that they made out there. That's the compromise that they came up with to actually expand the league to the West Coast. But this date, 1922, it became the National Football League that obviously has not changed at all, and that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
I missed this story yesterday, Tony, but this is 2 days old now. But former Cleveland Brown Carlos Dansby went through a tough situation being one of the main guys on a very, very bad Browns team. Well, Dansby said he noticed guys not giving full effort. That includes players, coaches, all the way up to the front office. Dansby told SiriusXM, the coaches and front office, there was just a lot of mess going on, a lot of things going on, a lot of distractions, because at a certain point, the guys had just shut down. The organization wasn't clicking. The coaches and the front office, there just was a lot of mess going on, a lot of things going on, a lot of distractions. The Browns did lose 18 of Mike Pettine's final 21 games as head coach in Cleveland. The Jets are still working on Ryan Fitzpatrick's contract situation, and wide receiver Eric Decker says he's really tired of answering questions about whether Fitzpatrick will be coming back to the team or not in an interview yesterday in New York with the NFL Network's Tiffany Blackman.
You're probably tired of hearing about this with the situation with quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick. Just how sick are you of having to talk about it?
A scale from 1 to 10, I'm at a 10. Because all offseason in New York, having to answer questions. And, you know, it's at a point now where we're gearing up for training camp and we want to kind of have an answer going into camp, knowing who's going to be our quarterback, get that timing, kind of build that identity offensively. So hopefully something gets figured out.
Are you at that point now, though, where you kind of have to move forward and work with the quarterbacks you have, like Geno Smith, and act like, you know, they're going to be your starter this?
Of course, and that's kind of how, you know, our mentality was this offseason. And, you know, Geno did a great job of his development, and, you know, we've had a lot of success in areas that we've been kind of stressing throughout kind of this part of the year, and that's, you know, red zone, third downs, and he's done a good job taking that leadership role and really helping us have success. So I'm excited about, you know, his progression and where he's at.
Kicker Sean Sweezum made nearly 90% of his field goal attempts over five healthy seasons with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Pittsburgh did release him this morning due to a failed physical. Chris Boswell will remain the team's primary kicker after a successful 2015 debut in place of Sweezum, who tore his ACL in the preseason.
If you're making 90% of your kicks in Pittsburgh, you're good.
That's pretty good.
And the fact that he's had injuries the last couple of years that have really set him back, and it looks like may derail his entire career, to kick at that kind of rate up there is pretty impressive.
He was the guy that was hurt in the Hall of Fame game last year, right?
Yeah.
That's you never want to see any injuries in the Hall of Fame game when the game doesn't matter at all.
No.
Moving on, two final stories here in the Honda Drive around the NFL. If Las Vegas hopes to lure the Raiders from Oakland, it's going to require the biggest public contribution ever made for a construction of a football stadium. Via multiple reports, a panel meeting yesterday pegged the price for taxpayers. Are you ready for this price, guys? $750 million.
It's not surprising. I mean, it's just kind of the cost of doing business now, billion-dollar stadiums.
Absolutely. That leaves roughly $650 million to be paid by private contributions with any cost overrun, the responsibility of the Raiders, the NFL, the Sands Casino, and other non-governmental entities. According to Bloomberg.com, that would be a record contribution by the people for a venue used by a really who could afford. The owners could really put down a lot more money. Lucas Oil Stadium, if you remember, 2 years ago or a couple years ago, they were the second biggest contribution ever at $620 million. So a lot of money coming from the city taxpayers of Indianapolis back then. Final story here, former Lions cornerback Stanley Wilson II did something really bizarre. According to KGW in Portland, Wilson was naked and trying to break into a home when he was shot by the homeowner. The 33-year-old Wilson last played for the Lions for three seasons and was released back in 2008. And he was charged with first and second degree attempted burglary and first and second degree trespassing. And more charges could be coming before they could process and arrest him. They had to take him to the hospital and cover him up, obviously, because he was running around naked. Police found Wilson in a water fountain in the homeowner's backyard and said that his injuries were not life-threatening and that the homeowner has cooperated with police. But your life has really gone off the rails if you're naked in a neighbor's pond in his backyard.
Yeah, that's a low point. There's no doubt about that. That would be a low point. I worry about what he's doing to himself, you know, chemically, if he's at that point where that kind of thing is even an option for him in his own head to do that kind of thing. I want to go back to the Dansby story for a second. I know I heard the boys on the Midday Chalk talking about this a little bit yesterday. My reaction to this story is I don't like to get on players very hard when I feel like they give a very honest and open answer about what goes on in NFL locker rooms. I get that other players in the league probably don't appreciate it. There's probably former players that would be on here that would be ready to rip, you know, Carlos Dansby up and down for what he had to say about what happened in Cleveland last year. For me, as a fan of the game and as someone who covers the NFL from this perspective, I kind of appreciate the honesty. And I don't necessarily think that what he's saying is everybody in that locker room quit on playing football because your job is to play football. I think there is a level of effort that it takes to win in the National Football League that if you're not willing to put it in every week, whether it be because you don't like the guy next to you or you don't like the guy coaching you, whatever it is, I think there's a level of effort that is good enough to keep your job, and I think there's a level of effort that's good enough to excel at your job. And I think we've seen it in Jacksonville. I think in 2012, when we had a player's mutiny without there actually having to be a mutiny, where they basically went to Coach Malarkey and said, look, you can't put us in padded practice this late in the year. We're done with that. We're done. We just don't want to do it anymore. And I think those kind of stories coming out of NFL locker rooms are so rare that when a player is willing to be honest about what's going on, especially with a team that's struggling the way Cleveland is, I don't want to rip him too awful much, but I can understand why players who have been in the league, his teammates would be very upset with him when he visits them twice a year this year with Cincinnati.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, just being honest about the situation. You know, we had Cliff Averill on the last couple of days ago, and he talked about the different situation from Detroit to Seattle. And he wasn't necessarily ripping Detroit, but just said what a difference it was. And that's a team that went 0-16 compared to a team that's playoff bound every year and won a Super Bowl in Seattle. So, you know, listen, we're not naive to think that it's all sunshine and rainbows in a locker room when you win 2, 3, 4, 5 games a year. That gets old. I think the veterans get tired of it, and it usually means something else is going on too. Now, I do think the reason Gus Bradley's still around is they've kept this thing together and guys playing hard, and not a lot of that in this locker room despite the lack of wins that they've had. So a little bit different situation here. One of the reasons Bradley is going into his fourth season, I think, in Jacksonville, and they believe in him still in that building. But this does not surprise me whatsoever. There seemed like there was a lack of direction in Cleveland just altogether.
Yeah.
You know? And now, at least I'll give Cleveland that, it feels like they are on the same page about what they want to do. And this might take a little while, and it's already been a long time for the Browns.
Sure.
But this does not surprise me. And by the way, I think you get this. Didn't we kind of get this out of the Miami Dolphins locker room?
A little bit, yeah.
You know, early last year when
Absolutely,
Philbin was
yeah.
let go? I mean, those stories, that's not unusual is what I'm trying to say. In fact, you got it out of, to a degree, not in this same way, but even out of a Tom Coughlin locker room in New York years ago,
yeah.
you know, where there were issues. And like you just mentioned with Malarkey here, you know, they went to the players' union about Coughlin, about the way he was having practices, and that means guys are fed up with it, guys don't like it, which means not everybody's on the same page, and you're probably not getting that excel effort that you're talking about. So this is not super surprising to me in a professional locker room to happen. The less of it you can have happen, I think the more success you're going to have. I think chemistry still is a big part of even a professional locker room.
No, and it has to be. And look, that's kind of my point with the Dansby thing is I don't think it means that everyone in Cleveland quit as far as they weren't willing yeah. to play football anymore. There's a difference between watching out for your own and watching out for the Browns. And I think from Dansby's comment, what I take out of it is everybody was watching out for themselves. At some point in that year, with what was going on in Cleveland, it was no longer about the Browns or their success. It was about me and my success. And I'm going to protect myself, and I'm going to put myself in a position where I'm going to be able to keep playing football. But I don't care about anybody else in this room right yeah. now. This is all going to be about me.
That's a dangerous situation.
Yeah, right. That's what I think that comment speaks to. Not necessarily that a bunch of guys are quitting. I applaud when players are willing to be that kind of honest with anybody about especially locker room situations. And again, I understand the players probably don't want to hear it. that kind of stuff needs to stay in the locker room. That's their opinion. That's fine. I enjoy it when we get to hear that kind of thing. And I'm interested to see what it's going to look like when Dansby gets to play the Browns twice this year.
Yeah,
just how
more,
much animosity there will
more
be.
More and more coming out of locker rooms now than ever before,
no
I
doubt.
Think, too. Whether just because guys have social media, they want to vent. Hey, just how about the hard knock stuff?
No doubt.
I mean, now you know more of what's going on behind the scenes. I think because of team websites like Jaguars.com or because of Hard Knocks, you get a feel for it more and more. And I think more organizations are transparent than ever have been in the NFL. And the Jags are a great example of that. They are
sure.
Very transparent.
No doubt. We're going to get into the list. USA Today put out a list today of the most depressing sports cities in America. You won't be surprised at who's at the bottom of that list, I guess. Is it the bottom or the top? I can never figure out what to say. Who would be ranked 40th among the misery list? So the least miserable sports city in America, but they all think that we're all against them. Those people up there in Boston. Your people, Martineau. I mean, my goodness. They just think everyone's against them. Y'all are holding all the cards, you bunch of clowns.
They're good people.
Up there in Boston.
Don't call them clowns.
Clowns.
That's not very nice.
Clowns. It's not very nice. I did not intend that comment to be very nice about the people of Boston. We'll get to who's at the other end of that list, as well as where Jacksonville ranks with some of the other cities in Florida as well on that USA Today list. The most depressing sports cities in America. As we roll along, Britt Martineau alongside Fat Tony here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
We got this a few moments ago on the text line driven by Duval Ford. Has anybody asked to Sean Gibson about Dansby's comment? No, not yet. They've been obviously out of the building, so I haven't seen Deshaun Gibson, I hope, is on vacation somewhere enjoying life a little bit here. As he signed that big free agent contract,
yeah,
he's finally got
spend
a chance.
Some of that money.
Yeah, man. He's finally got a chance to relax a little bit. Britt Martineau, Fat Tony here with you. And I can go back with Gibson specifically coming out of Cleveland and some of the comments that he made when he got here to Jacksonville. We were discussing this a moment ago, Brent. I mean, he got here to Jacksonville and it was basically, it's nice to come to a winner, is essentially what he was saying. Like, there are a lot of guys when they get out of Cleveland here for the last couple of years that have been very happy to get out of Cleveland.
Yeah.
And whatever's going on in that locker room, and Dansby's just another example of that. He just happens to be a much more vocal and outspoken guy than most NFL anybody's are used to. I mean, most guys just don't talk the way that Carlos Dansby is willing to talk about what goes on behind the curtain.
Yeah, I think, Gibson, I remember that in the news conference because we had Cleveland TV stations calling us for the quotes.
I don't doubt it.
And he wasn't really – he did his best to not rip Cleveland. But he subtly kind of just hinted at some things that were different. And again, you got to be careful when you say, even he says, coming to a winner. I mean, listen, this nobody's won here in Jacksonville.
No,
but,
which is why the comment was so startling.
And I think what he meant by that is the culture.
Yeah.
You know, that it feels like they're about to do something compared to they're spinning their wheels still in Cleveland. So I think the whole difference as well with Dansby is you're adding the rivalry part of it. I mean, those guys do play twice a year, Cleveland and Cincinnati, not far apart. And they'll add a little salt to the wound. And Cincinnati is not going to have a problem. It doesn't look like beating Cleveland a couple more times this
probably
year.
Not.
Cincinnati's very good. So that's always good stuff. I think it's good because you learn a little bit more about – you always learn more about what happened or how players felt or about a guy or about a locker room, about a coach or whatever when they leave because it's easier. They're trying to buy in while they're there, whether they're happy or not. They're trying to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always interesting once they go.
No doubt about it. And Cleveland, obviously, with the head coach being fired, a bunch of good players in Cleveland, let's be honest, that are
they have a good,
getting
yeah,
out.
Yeah, they've had some good players.
Yeah, and with I haven't seen anything from Alex Mack or those types of guys, you know, talking about it. But maybe he said something in Atlanta that just wasn't reported. Like, I don't know if everyone in New York is necessarily aware of what Deshaun Gibson said when he got to Jacksonville, right? So maybe Alex Mack did say something when he got to Atlanta about having the opportunity to get out of Cleveland,
yeah,
even if he is going to Atlanta, which hasn't had a great run of success. They've been pretty good for the last handful of years. But I'm curious.
Mack set the table for a couple of years to get out.
No doubt.
You know what I mean?
No doubt. The USA Today has an article up ranking the most miserable, sad, depressing sports cities in America. All right, and
is this before or after
This is after
King James.
This is after King James, because Cleveland, I think of the 40 cities they have listed, they got Cleveland at 24. And there's no way that Cleveland is anything but the most miserable sports city in America outside of that championship for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Even if they were the team that, when you look at the teams that are at the bottom of this list, the most miserable cities, even if Cleveland was the team that, because they had LeBron James, probably had the most hope of winning a championship in one of the major sports, it's still because of the way that Cleveland has found a way to lose, you know, in the last really 60, 70 years. They have, it's not just that Cleveland hasn't won anything, it's that Cleveland continually loses. And it makes it that much more miserable. But the least miserable sports city in America is Boston, despite the fact that, again, they think all of us are against them. Everyone in Boston thinks the whole country, the NFL and Roger Goodell are all out to get them, and they just keep winning championships in that city. So Boston's there.
It has been an incredible run the last 15 years.
No doubt. San
all four
Francisco.
Sports. All four major sports have won.
Yep. San Francisco. Next on that list, Pittsburgh. These are all the cities that have a good. Denver, Seattle, Chicago. Chicago. I guess the Blackhawks have been really good.
Blackhawks have been very good.
Yeah, but the Cubs are good right now. But just wait, Cubs fans.
Yeah.
They don't even, like, if I was a Cubs fan, I wouldn't even celebrate until it happened.
Yeah, but
like,
it
I'm
is
not
fun
talking
time
smack.
Right
I know
now.
Sticks don't believe in that. Devin in there, he was talking smack all through the playoffs last year as a Cubs fan, and I just kept saying, you know where you're coming from, right? Like, you know the roots of this team and what's going to happen. But as far as where Jacksonville ranks on this list, as, again, it's the 40 most miserable sports cities in America ranked.
Those Jacksonville Sharks, man, they're keeping our morale high here.
I guess so.
Jacksonville
apparently,
Giants?
Apparently they don't think so. As far as the cities in Florida, Tampa came in at number 17 on this list. So 17th most miserable. Orlando at 16. And for a bunch of the cities in the middle of the list, there are no, like, even comments on it. It's just they list the city. Like, it's Milwaukee 19, Nashville 18, Tampa Bay area 17, Orlando at 16 with a blurb. There's just so much passiveness from fans in this section of the rankings. All right? So that's what they say about Orlando. Then Memphis at 15, Salt Lake City 14, Sacramento 13, Jacksonville comes in at number 12. And then the person who put this list together shows either their ignorance or they want to be the funny guy, right? They want to be the funny guy.
Seats.
No, even worse. Maybe the Jags will be higher on this list when they move to London.
Oh, gosh.
Boom! Burn, Jacksonville!
That's a good list.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, are you serious? Like, anybody putting
together
a list like this?
I wonder if they're still moving to London with the Brexit happening.
I don't know. I actually saw Christy Dosh, the wife of Chad Scott here in the building, actually put up an article on Forbes, I think it was, that actually said this makes it easier for an NFL team to move into London because you're no longer having to deal basically with the EU rules. It would just be England has to basically say yes.
Yeah, whatever rules there
yeah.
are.
Now,
there.
You still have a bunch of other hurdles that you have to, like, what do you pay them, the players' union, and how they'll feel about it. Like, there's a bunch of hurdles that you'd still have to jump through, but at least it makes it easier in one sense from that perspective.
We're going to talk to Mark Lamping here in a couple hours and down – the Jags headquarters, so I'm going to ask them a little bit about that, see if there's any ramifications, because I don't know. I have
no idea
what kind of ramifications, if any, that has on it. And so this afternoon on the Frangie Show, we'll have a little bit of an update on that to see if they say anything. I would think there's minimal impact on the NFL.
I would think so, too. I would think so. But Jacksonville comes in on this list at number 12 in their little joke about potentially moving to London. Would you care to guess at who you think would be top five if you haven't looked at the list already?
Top five worst?
Worst.
Right? This is the worst.
Most miserable sports cities.
I would say Buffalo's in the top five.
Buffalo's number one.
Yep.
With the two sports they have, they got the Buffalo Bills and the Sabres. Let's see. They the little blurb they had, do we really need to explain this one? With
yeah.
Buffalo at number one.
Let me say Philadelphia.
Philadelphia is not correct. They have Philadelphia at number 7.
Okay. I jumped out of line because I was going to go to Tampa next.
But Tampa's already up there.
Oh, did you already have Tampa?
Yeah, Tampa was 17.
Oh, okay. I thought you left it out of the Florida swing.
No, they got Tampa. The three Florida cities with Tampa, Orlando, and Jacksonville are from 17 to 12.
Oh, okay. So it was Miami you left out of there.
Yeah, I didn't see where Miami was. Miami's 29.
Okay. Let's see. Who else would be miserable?
Let's see. One of them's local-ish.
In Atlanta?
Atlanta. Number three on the list with the Falcons, Hawks, and Braves. And they list, like, with this, they list, like, winning season, playoff appearances, championship bursts, and championships since the year 2000 for the whole city. And it's Atlanta's a city where they basically fill the bar on winning seasons. They fill the bar on playoff appearances, championship bursts. They got six since 2000. They got one championship.
Okay. Did you already read off Cincinnati?
No. Cincinnati is number four on the list.
Okay. There we go.
The Bengals give Cincinnati fans something to cheer whenever they're not busy trying to figure out if Andy Dalton is actually any good.
That's pretty good.
And the Reds are one of the worst teams in baseball this year.
Yeah, let's see. So we got three out of the five.
Yes.
Right,
you got two and five remaining.
Two and five. Two. How am I missing two? It should be like a slam dunk.
Two is stupid, in my opinion. Just because of
San Diego?
Yeah. Just because of the city it is. Why would you care?
Yeah.
You're in San Diego.
Yeah, but you don't want an apathetic fan base.
Out of the big four sports, that is the city with the longest time. They have 106 seasons, 104 seasons without a title.
Is it really that long? And they have an elite quarterback too. Like, sort of fit what you're saying. They can drive you a little nuts because they've got an elite guy in a quarterback driven league.
Oh,
and
I get
they
it.
Can't win.
I get it. Why, from just a sports perspective, you would feel that way.
Yeah.
Except that it's 105 degrees here today, and in San Diego right now it's 72. You know, like there's
this is a great city.
Like the idea of complaining about anything if you happen to have the opportunity to live in San Diego is beyond me a little bit. The number five city on this list does not have that luxury.
Yeah, so it's a little cold?
Yeah.
Gosh, who are we missing?
Another one of the worst teams in baseball this year.
Minneapolis?
Yeah. Minneapolis, St. Paul, with the Vikings, who have never won a Super Bowl championship, the Twins, the Timberwolves, and the Minnesota Wild.
Okay.
Is that the name of the hockey team?
Okay.
Yeah. So those are your five. Minneapolis, Cincinnati, Atlanta, San Diego, and Buffalo. Buffalo, I totally get. Like, the really cold cities where they get nothing going for them, I totally get the misery of being in those places, but somewhere like San Diego.
I actually thought Jacksonville would be higher on that list.
I mean, come on, San Diego. Well, they only got the one thing.
Because the only one, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's not like it's three or four teams torturing this city.
Yeah, yeah. That's got to be it.
It's just the one.
And that list obviously has a correlation between loser teams and loser cities, but I have a list here, combined seasons without a championship in the big four sports. And here are the cities. I'll go in reverse order. Atlanta has 72 seasons without a championship. Washington, 84. Milwaukee, 89. The Twin Cities, 90. San Diego, 99. And Buffalo is the big loser at 104.
Huh. 104. And just Buffalo only has the two sports, guys.
I got chicken wings.
Buffalo and San Diego with the two sports are that high on that list. That gives you an idea of how long it's been since they won anything.
That is pretty wild, though. You say, the two. I mean, I know this wasn't a weather or quality of life factor, but I mean, you couldn't be more similar in their lack of championships, but more far apart in their climates and where you'd want to live.
Oh, I know.
You know?
Oh, give me San Diego every single time.
Yeah, if you want to be bad, at least you want to be warm. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to have to deal with that winter. That's for sure.
That's a tough winter there.
Yeah, I have no desire to deal with that, and they have to deal with that directly when their football team is blowing another season. Like, that's supposed to be the warm, like, gooey center of that winter. Is at least we got the Bills, and therefore about a decade they did.
We got it. When you stay warm, you got to drink some liquor. So maybe that's why Bill's Mafia is so diehard and so crazy.
Yeah.
They're just always liquored up.
They are nuts.
And they're very passionate.
They are nuts. Yeah,
very
man.
Passionate.
Some of the stuff, the videos that come out of Bill's Mafia stuff is just, I mean, you people are lunatics. Like, I have to deal with these Jaguars fans every day, and some of you guys are pretty nuts, all right? And I'm saying that in the most kind, like, loving way possible. Some of you guys are pretty nuts. That Bills Mafia, they're insane people. I don't want to be around them.
Yeah, when we start seeing the tailgates and then people at the slab going through tables, then I would say Jaguars and Bold City Brigade's gone too far. But
yeah, it's unsafe. What the Bills Mafia does is unsafe. And I can understand why when your team is Buffalo and you're just trying to stay warm. Darn it. That's all you're trying to do during that pregame. And so you find different ways. And for them, apparently it is gallons and gallons of alcohol is the way that they choose to stay warm. We got the fan feedback spotlight coming up next. We'll talk about our answers to the question today, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. What Jaguars player, past or present, would you choose to give you a motivational speech inspired by the fact that Independence Day resurgence hitting theaters today? The iconic moment from the first Independence Day movie is the presidential speech to unite the world as they got ready for the big battle against the aliens attacking planet Earth. So who would you choose? Jaguars player, past or present, Brent Martineau, Fat Tony here with you. We'll give our answers as well as we wrap things up on a Friday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
This is the quarterback here at Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
All right, the fan feedback spotlight today. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships asking you, Jaguars fans, what Jaguars player, past or present, would you choose to give you a motivational speech inspired by the speech from Independence Day? Do we have that ready? Can we hear the president from Independence Day one more time? Just to give you an idea of what you're reaching for here, people. What you're trying to pull out. The kind of motivation you need. As 20 years ago, we all flocked to theaters right around July 4th weekend, and we saw the president unite the world behind this speech.
And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
Have you ever thought about how difficult it would actually be to give one of those speeches in that kind of environment? We're actually on like a movie set with all these extras, and you know what you're saying is completely ridiculous. Like how difficult it would be to commit to it the way that Pullman does there in that scene.
Yeah, I guess that's why they call it acting.
I guess so.
That's why some are really good at it. But I was trying to think of this. Who would be that guy on this team? You know, the guy that first jumped to mind? And I didn't think about it too much, but the guy that entered my mind first was Telvin Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I could see him, you know, getting all fired up, you know, giving that fired up speech.
Yeah.
And it'd be genuine with passion. You know, I'm trying to think of another.
I could see Sendarik doing something like that, too.
Sendarik, yeah, no doubt. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, Sendarik would be right there.
And I like
trying to think someone on the offensive side of the ball.
I think Allen Hurns would be pretty good at it just because of, you know, where he's come from. You know, as an undrafted guy, he's got a lot that he could share in that
heartfelt
kind of regard. And it, yeah, everything he's like, when he was out of the Super Bowl, he's the only guy that's walking through the room with a smile on his face that has to do all those interviews.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yes, I get to do this. Like,
yeah, yeah.
That kind of opportunity. So, I could see Allen Hurns being that type of guy.
Yeah, I don't. The interesting thing is, I don't see Blake Bortles being that guy. And that's okay.
I think he is in the huddle.
Well, I do too, but I just don't think he's the get up in front of the end. Now, if he had to, I'm sure there'll be a moment or this poignant moment at some point in his career that he will.
Sure.
Because all of them do. You know? I mean, Tom Brady does. Peyton Manning does. Those guys have done that before. And so there'll be a moment. I just don't see it. I mean, maybe it happens already. But I don't. He's not that much of a rah-rah guy is my point.
No, and I think when we had the when he came up on the NFL Top 100 list, they had some audio from inside a huddle. I think it was the game in London where he stepped into the huddle and he basically, 80 yards, guys, we're going to go win
That's
this
right.
game. Like,
yeah.
It's that kind of thing. I think he's good there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And I don't necessarily think that means that you have to be the guy that's got to be up in front of the room inspiring everybody. You can have other guys that are capable of doing that as long as when that quarterback steps in the huddle and says, we're going to go 80 yards, you believe him. And I think the guys on this team are at a point where they do. What about former players? Is there anybody that jumped to mind?
Yeah, I was trying to think, you know, a guy with a lot of cachet in that locker room, I think over the years it would be genuine, and because it didn't happen all the time, because he wasn't necessarily rah-rah, but he could deliver this, I think is Maurice Jones-Drew. You know, I think at times if needed, he could deliver that type of passionate speech if needed. How many times it happened, I have no idea.
Right.
But he kind of jumps to mind for me. Man, defensively, I'm sure Daryl Smith maybe did it, but again, kind of a quiet guy, you know, doesn't really show a lot of emotion. So I don't know if he would have been the guy, at least for me, mm-hmm. that I would see doing it.
Before I get to some of my answers here, what did we get on Twitter today, Tyler?
On Twitter, Ocho Fisho dropping a joke saying Byron Leftwich just so David Lamb can criticize his speaking one more time. Clarence Austin says Telvin Smith, that Seminole and him expects no less than the best. Matt Black says Kirk Morrison, he always brought the fire. Tony Aquilini says Brad Meester, six kids. I'd be afraid to get out of bed. Jordan says Jerry Porter. Wayne Chandler says double D by a mile. And we talked about this question.
Yeah, double D's a good one.
Absolutely. He's a great, great speaker. And when I saw this question, I saw that we had Brent Martineau on the show today. It reminded me of a guy that, Brent, you talked to on the Frangie show, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Inspired, revived, new man. Moving on to the next one, onward, attacking with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
That would be the top of my list for a motivational
Jim
speaker.
Harbaugh, bring him in. Bring him in. Now, listen, interesting, the Jags bring speakers in, and they do some of that. I had someone on Twitter say, past Gus Bradley, present Gus Bradley. Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously we see that a lot in the locker room, the head coach. I think we're getting away from the head coach part of it. But those are some good answers. And Donovan Darius and Micah Ross just tweeted at us, too. Double D. I mean, he might top the list. I mean, he really might.
Donovan's good, man.
he may top the list. I love listening to him talk.
Donovan could be my answer to the question for the last couple days. I mean, yesterday we asked who's the most influential Jaguars player or coach of all time. I think Coughlin's probably still the top of that list for me. Mm-hmm. But I think Donovan playing that box safety position, the rules about, again, franchise player changed because of what happened with Donovan Darius here in Jacksonville. So I think he gets a lot of credit for that. Plus, all the work that he does off the field still here in the city of Jacksonville, that's there
as
well.
And in the NFL, not just in Jacksonville.
Yeah, he's a motivational guy. Like, there are guys that when they come in studio and do this show, you know, with Mike and I, you walk out feeling like, all right, I'm going to go run today. Like, and Donovan Darius is one of those types of guys where you just feel that
way.
Heck,
I worked out for 2 months because of Donovan Darius.
Right?
We did that 8-week challenge one time. That was awesome. I wish I could do it again.
Some of the answers we got on Facebook today from Les, we got Mike Peterson. His quote was, "Welcome to Duval, prepare to be hit." Yeah. Best line ever. I do like that. Kevin said, "This might be the easiest question yet." Double D, Donovan Darius can motivate a guy to run through fire. From Eric Mojo, passed by 31 teams, proved with effort goals can be reached. From Alex, "I love the way John Henderson would get hyped up before the game by getting one of the trainers to slap him. Man, that Henderson dude was intense. I would love for him to huddle everyone up and give a motivational speech." From Chris, "I want to smack John Henderson." That would be his motivation because you need to run after that. From Aaron, he said Mike Peterson. Got another Mike Peterson from James. From Tommy, a name that I didn't see anywhere else. Got to be Richard Collier. And again, I think that there could be some real motivation coming from a guy who's dealt with what he has. From Young Loco, Telvin Smith. From Matt, Paul Posluszny. And one more vote there for Donovan Darius from Tony there on Facebook. Yeah, hey, Tyler.
Yeah, we got a handful of calls. Richard Collier was one that we've gotten over the last hour or two. Also, two more. Paul Spicer.
I was going to say Paul Spicer. That was the one that was going to come out of my mouth next.
And Tommy Mack.
Tommy Mack's good. I've had opportunity to do radio with both those guys. Spicer is like on that same level of Darius positive. Like, he's just one of those guys. And for Darius is a first-round pick, so he came in with some status. Paul is not one of those guys. He was always just a grinder, man. But always so good to talk to in the locker room. He's been so good to hang out with after he's been done playing. He's so happy to talk about anything with anybody. So, yeah, I could totally see Spicer being a guy that does that. And a Meathead 55 for sure.
Yeah, McManus, that would be a good one for sure. Here's the thing. When you do that, when you have that guy, and unlike the movie that you brought up, and this is why the topic with Independence Day in your acting, I think it has to be genuine,
yep,
and real and passionate, and people know when it is and it isn't. You know, and so those guys that do get up and do it, it has to be part of their makeup and part of what they do and believe in. So I think the real-life experiences like you brought up with maybe a Mojo getting passed over all those times, Richard Collier obviously now with what he's gone through post-football, those kind of guys, and Alan Hearns, I think you mentioned kind of in the same vein, that they will, that resonates because it's real. And so I think whoever that guy is in that locker room, I would like to find the guy that we really wouldn't think to mention, but might be that guy, you know? like in that Jags locker room.
Sure.
And we don't know. Now, listen, a guy like Tayshaun Gibson seems like he might be that guy, right? You know, is Malik Jackson like that? I don't know. Is Dante Fowler like? We're going to learn about some of these young guys.
Absolutely,
that might
yeah.
be those, you know, pregame, get after it type of players.
Hopefully, we get some of that here.
It could even be Chad Henne, a guy that doesn't get on the field, but he's a guy in the locker room who's seen it all.
Yeah, yeah, and a veteran. Yeah, and they don't have many veterans now in that locker room.
No.
Well, they're getting more and more because of some of the free agency.
Yeah.
But like Mercedes Lewis, yeah, but he doesn't.
Doesn't strike me that way.
Nah, he's more kind of a cool customer,
uh-huh.
you know? And not to say these other guys aren't cool, but he doesn't
and maybe
wear it on his sleeve.
There is some element of the guy who does play it cool all the time. When you see him come out of that shell, there's a certain magnetism to that.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's like, he's saying what now?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this guy doesn't talk.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know who's like that, I think? Pozlesny.
Mm-hmm.
If Pozlesny wants to get after you now, you know it's for something meaningful.
Sure.
I would
no doubt.
Think, because I don't think he does that day in, day out.
Well, that was fun. That was fun today, and hopefully you get inspired by something we had to say. I wouldn't choose me to give anybody a motivational speech. Let me say that. But
okay, we should give everybody a motivational speech heading into the weekend, baby. It's Friday.
Thanks for coming in with me today, Brent.
You got it, man.
Hopefully we get to do this again sometime soon with all three of us getting together for this show between now and training camp at some point in time. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on. So for Tyler Devitt, for Brent Martineau, for an absent Mike Dempsey, still out of town for another 6 days, people. You'll get him back next Thursday. I'm Fat Tony. We'll welcome in the boys of Midday Chalk next here on 1010XL.